Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, October 21st, 2019, and this is episode 185 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today, all the way down in the South, is Eric Nathanson. How you doing, buddy?
I'm wonderful. I got to turn off the air conditioning this week, and let me tell you, oh boy, it ain't as hot as a... I don't even have a quick Southern statement anymore. I got to turn off the air conditioning, so that for the first time in months. So it's good down here. You just got back from being under the sea. How was your trip?
Yes. Now the Little Mermaid's playing in my head. It was fantastic. Just real briefly, we took Bob Ballard's boat out, the Nautilus. We went last year, made this great discovery of all these mommy octopuses basically brooding their eggs and warm water coming from the seafloor, which geologists told me that couldn't be possible, but it was. And this time we went back to look at that place, to survey it more, leave some long-term loggers out there, temperature, oxygen, all sorts of cool stuff. It's great for science so we can understand this geologically and count more octopus, see how big this population is. And then on our second dive, we were looking for more of that stuff and corals and all that, and we came across this whale fall. Basically, a whale fall is a whale that has died in the ocean, and it eventually sinks. And it provides just this boon, this oasis of food, like a Las Vegas buffet to the deep sea, which normally has very little energy content and food falling down from above. And, you know, marine snow, small particles and things of that nature. And so this whale gets scavenged by sharks and other predators and scavengers, and we came across it as probably 3 or 4 months old, which is really remarkable because most whale falls will last 50 to 100 years, but most of those, of course, are bones, right? There's nothing growing on them or eating them because they're just bones. This one still had a lot of flesh and internal organs, and we're close to Halloween. We could talk about this. It was, you know, some people go, ooh, that's grisly, but from the science point of view, we were all stoked. We're like little kids. We streamed all of this live to the internet every dive, 24 hours a day. We were in the water. Each dive was more than 30 hours long. So, yes, we do take shifts. We can't stay up that long. And it was an incredible experience, and we're so happy to get all the science and data. And at the very end of the dive, I was telling Eric pre-show, we actually were looking for a second site where maybe this warm water is coming out from the seafloor with maybe more octopuses with all of their eggs lined up in these warm water crevices and cracks. And sure enough, we found it in the last 45 minutes of the dive, of a 32-hour dive. And we're just over the moon about everything. It's just, it's been a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's been stretching here for a couple of years. You know, going in the Alvin in March, getting to physically dive down there, just doing tons of interviews on the boat both years. I just did an interview with the Mercury News before this call or this show. And it's been wonderful. The social media impact, you know, I was telling Eric, one of the videos that the ship posted has over 4.3 million views. So I'm hoping that maybe there's a couple of Giants fans in there that might come over to our side, give us a little bump. That would be nice. I can't even imagine something like that, you know, but yeah, it's been well received and made a lot of media. So just real quickly, if you ever want to check it out, you know, go on YouTube and Google Nautilus, EV Nautilus, or Monterey Bay Sanctuary, or look at their Twitter feed. Just Google Octopus Garden, Whale Fall. It'll all pop up if you haven't seen it. It has our video of us approaching it, discovering it, and all of our voices in the van going, oh, it's a whale fall. And we're like children, you know, finding Christmas presents when we find stuff like this. Some people go, it's a freaking dead whale. Who cares? Well, scientifically, it's really valuable. It's very rare. So we're totally stoked by it. It's amazing experience. I feel very blessed, and I'm very happy. So, but glad to be back on land now to talk about baseball, something that my marine biology brethren don't really follow. I'm one of those weird dudes that kind of straddles a lot of different universes that I love. And sports is, of course, one of them, but I'm also a biologist. You know, I'm working with people who don't own television sets and think sports are crude and, you know, lowbrow.
What do they point all their furniture at?
I know, right?
Yeah, sorry, that's an old friend's joke.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, no, it's funny. There were literally several people on the boat, and I encounter this all the time, going, you know, oh, I like this show. I like this show. Oh, I'm missing the World Series, or I'm missing the playoffs and this stuff like that. And they go, yeah, I don't own a television, so I don't know any about any of that stuff. And it's like, do you churn your own butter? Do you dry your clothes on a line? Like, why don't you have a television? That's just weird.
I mean, even with the streaming services nowadays, having a television, everything can go up on the screen. It's not like you have to watch Netflix on the laptop anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, we're back. We're here to review the League Championship Series. The World Series does start tomorrow night. And we had two completely different championship series. I myself missed everything in the NLCS while I was at sea, but I did come home in time to see, of course, Game 6 of the American League Championship Series, in which the Astros were leading 3-2. And I got a highlight here. We'll play in a bit as we talk about the game. But the Astros were winning the game. And here we go in the top of the ninth. They're up by 2 runs. It was 4-2 Astros. And DJ LeMahieu just hit a dagger into the hearts of all those Astros fans there by hitting an opposite field 2-run home run to tie it. And at that point, it really did seem to swing in the Yankees' favor. I mean, I don't know what your view was.
Well, it's funny. It actually kind of played out unsurprisingly to me. I'm watching that game. I wished I had been live streaming or on somewhere, because everybody was worried about Aaron Judge coming up in that inning with a runner on base. And, oh, my God, Aaron Judge can tie the game, can tie the game. DJ LeMahieu was the best Yankees hitter the entire series.
Clearly,
yeah. And it was just like, no, I think you need to worry about it. I said it out loud. You know, my wife was sitting there watching with me. I said it out loud. I'm like, they keep talking about Judge, but LeMahieu's the guy that could poke one out to right field real quick. And sure enough, boom, he hits one. And Springer was so close to catching it.
Oh, they show that slow-mo replay. He was just an inch or two from his glove. That was like a great effort, yeah.
I wonder if he had jumped, you know, closer to the line a little bit, had he been more in line with the ball, had he been able to catch it. But, you know, It was one of those games where, I don't know if you saw the chatter, it was a bullpen game, and people were complaining that it's a bullpen game and this shouldn't be happening. And, you know, there was a rainout during the series which forced the travel day to be taken out. So they were playing 4 straight days, and they didn't set their rotations up for this. So I totally understood why it was a bullpen game. And I think what people fail to realize is, when you're that late in a playoff series, every game is a bullpen game. You are going to go into your bullpen as soon as you feel that you need to. Not everybody has a Madison Bumgarner, a Steven Strasburg, you know, or a Garrett Cole to just ride the entire time. So, like, even look at Game 7 in 2014. Hudson pitched, what, like 1 2/3 innings? And he was the starter that day. So, you know, I wasn't bothered by the bullpen game. And as we saw, it still ended up the Astros closer pitching the top of the ninth, giving up the 2-run bomb to LeMahieu. And then the bottom of the ninth, I still can't believe that Altuve was able to, after the 2 quick outs in the inning and then Springer walked, it was just like, you thought it could happen, but, you know, nah, Chapman might get it. And then Jose Altuve pulled a Travis Ishikawa. It was unbelievable.
I'll go ahead and stop the highlight there, because, like, we both noticed Joe Buck, who made the call, it was like a minute of silence, just letting the viewers kind of soak it in. Which is a good call. You don't need to start talking about everything right away. Just he made the call, sent him to the World Series, and then just let it kind of soak. So that was a good job by Joe Buck. And like you said, he pulled an Ishikawa. It's the first time since Ishikawa that someone's hit a walk-off home run to clinch a championship series. So these things are rare. And like you said, Chapman comes in, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, look, Mariano Rivera lost to the Diamondbacks, right? I mean, they're even the greatest closers in baseball. They're not perfect. They're close to it, but they're not perfect. And he walked the guy ahead of Altuve, and that's kind of what set up the drama right there. And who knows what would have happened if they went to extra innings. I mean, we could have seen a game 7 last night. That would have been a lot of fun too. But personally, of course, I'm glad the Yankees didn't advance. We don't want them to win 28 world champions. Chip, so that's fine. But I love it. I love Altuve. He is just such a great little player. I mean, he's literally 5'6" or 5'7", whatever you want to believe. And he can just still generate that bat swing, that swing speed. I don't understand how he does it in that little frame, but he tattooed that. I mean, that wasn't even close. That was a no doubter.
Yeah, he hit that like he knew the pitch was coming, which I suspect he kind of did. And I'm not talking sign stealing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you watch Chapman in that ninth, he got through the first two hitters. And then to Springer, he started off, Springer is a first pitch fastball kind of guy. And Chapman bared down and threw an off speed pitch on the first pitch that Springer actually took. He didn't even swing. He started to, and then he held it, but it dropped right through the zone. And I feel like that actually took Chapman out of his game because he wasn't able to locate his fastball after that happened. Mm-hmm. And when it came time for Altuve to bat, it was a 1-1 count when he hit it. But the only thing that was getting over the plate at that time was an off-speed pitch, which meant that Altuve could sit off-speed and just take the fastball. And having played baseball, we both know you can look fastball and you can adjust off-speed, but you cannot look off-speed and adjust fastball. It's just impossible to do. If your brain is already looking for something slower and something faster comes, you just cannot adjust fast enough to get the bat there. You literally didn't start your swing soon enough. And I think Altuve took the opposite approach. I think he was looking for the breaking pitch, and it got in that happy zone, which is like shoulder high for him. Because like you said, at his height, it's unbelievable how he can hit the ball. And he just took it out of there. And it was the perfect kind of ending for, you know, that series. It was back and forth. It was a good series. I was not shocked that the Yankees were able to send it back to Houston. Game 5 was impressive by James Paxton of the Yankees. I didn't know he had that in him. Mm-hmm. But I do, as much as we've talked up the Nats, I feel like that was the quote-unquote World Series. Those were the two best teams in baseball slugging it out. And it's really funny to see that in this day and age of bullpenning that the Astros are doing it with starting pitching and hitting. And the two teams that they've dispatched, the Rays and the Yankees, were bullpen-type pitching teams. And the Astros are like, nah, that might work good for 162 games, but it doesn't work good for 5 or 7 games.
Yeah.
So they totally earned it. They did. It's fun to watch the Astros play. There's no real hole in their lineup. And like you said, the Yankees are out. And I will fully admit, I think I hate the Yankees more than the Dodgers. And that's a product of my raising. Because I was much happier when the Yankees – not that I wasn't happy when the Dodgers. I mean, you heard us last week. But I was really happy when the Yankees got knocked out. And this is the first decade since the 1910s that the Yankees will not make the World Series.
That was a crazy stat to think that they made the World Series at least one time in each decade of the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. They did not make a single World Series in the 10s. So, I mean, just That's a crazy stat. And even, you know, they still have 27 world championships, so they have that to hang their hat on. But, you know, when the playoffs started, much like in previous years, you're thinking there is a possibility of a Dodgers-Yankees World Series. Oh, God, yep. Shoot me, you know?
Yep. And we totally avoided that.
Yeah. We totally avoided that. But unfortunately, the Dodgers and the Yankees look like they're going to be good for the next couple of years, so that still could happen. But every single year we can stave that off would be fantastic. And, you know, I've seen a few fans on social media starting to talk about the Astros like the Golden State Warriors. Like, well, I'm getting tired of the Astros winning all the time. It's like, well, they've only won one World Series. I mean, you know, they didn't make it last year. They got knocked out. So, you know, they're still an up-and-coming team in the sense of number of world championships. I don't mind them being there at all. I think they're a model of how you can draft and do well in the future. They're homegrown, much like the Giants were in their, you know, World Series runs. And then as far as it comes with the Nationals, I mean, this is a team that we were talking pre-show, really reminds us of a lot, kind of a combination of several of the Giants World Championship teams. Certainly in 14, doing it the whole wild card approach, you know, a little bit of 2010, the Misfits, a little bit of 2012, being down in several series and games. They were down to the Brewers in late in that game, and they had that fortuitous error by the young kid in right field, which allowed them to win that game. They were down in the series against the Dodgers. They came back and won that one. And then they went in and just swept the Cardinals. And you said, and I was gone out at sea, so I didn't know this, that the Cardinals never led at all?
Not once. And in fact, they didn't get a hit from a left-handed batter until game three. Anibal Sanchez turned back the clock in game
one. Yeah, what the
one.
Hell was
Absolutely.
That? That was yeah. bizarre.
And it was soft tossing type stuff. He was just – he has what they call the butterfly changeup where it just kind of floats up there. And, you know, these Cardinal hitters were swinging through it. The Cardinals got exposed as not belonging. They really did. And I just – It was almost sad that we couldn't see, like, Nats Dodgers was a better series. Cardinals Braves was a better series than Nats Cardinals. It was just once they got ahead in game three, you kind of knew it was over. And the starting pitching, again, just like at the Astros, dictated the way the series went. And I found this interesting. This goes back to talking about, you know, people getting sick of the Astros and stuff like that. You know, and we mentioned the Yankees didn't make the World Series this decade. You know who won the most pennants this past decade, right?
The most pennants?
Most pennants. Not World Series, just the most pennants.
No.
The San Francisco Giants.
Well, they were three. And
they're the only ones.
Three, right?
Nope.
No?
Rangers, Cardinals, Red Sox, Royals, and Astros, and Dodgers. They all won two pennants.
Two.
The Giants won three, which is just amazing. To bring it back to the Giants podcasting part of it, the Giants end the decade as the winningest playoff franchise out of any of them, which is fantastic. But they never had a series like the Nats just – I guess the Tiger series was kind of like this for the Giants in 2012, where they just kind of stepped on the other team's throat and just didn't let up. Yeah. But, I mean, to see Anibal Sanchez dominate like that, and then Steven Strasburg, who to me has just been the Nats MVP of the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, you didn't miss much when it came to this series at all. It was like a foregone conclusion once the game three, they took the lead, and then the Cardinals just looked beat. They couldn't hit the ball. The only people that could were Ozuna and Goldschmidt and Edmund, this guy Edmund. But other than that, it was like watching a team that's destined to get to the World Series. Now, will that continue? They've had a week off. So will that continue? It's tough to say. Only one team that has swept an LCS in this division series era, and I'm talking all the way back to 69, only one team that swept the NLCS or ALCS went on to win the World Series. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think that's just from when they made it a seven-game series, so that's mid-80s sometime. So it's 35 years, and only one team has won the World Series that swept it. So the Nats will have their work cut out for them. And it's just, they're a fun team to watch. They remind you of the Misfits in a way because they've got like Parra in the dugout. He's got his little shark. There's a little shark thing they've got hanging on the netting. They do the baby shark whenever they get hits. And I really think that Gerardo Parra getting cut by the Giants and picked up by the Nationals is part of what got this team going. He seems to be that clubhouse guy. He's the glue guy. Mm-hmm. And so here are the Nats, their first year after Bryce Harper leaves them, going to the World Series and not even thinking twice about it.
I know. I just total slap in the face to Bryce Harper. I love it. He leaves and then boom, they make it to the promised land. So, yeah, a week off. A lot of times it's hurt certain teams, but who knows what's going to happen with the Nats? I mean, they got really dominating starting pitching. Of course, the Astros do too. I think this is going to be a well-pitched series. I just, you know, the Nationals hitters just don't compare with the Astros hitters. But again, the Cardinals, I thought, were, you know, they thumped the Braves. What, they scored 10 runs in the first inning in that clinching game in the division series. The Cardinals aren't shabby, but they just did not show up. The National pitchers just shut them down with a couple of no-hitters into the sixth, seventh inning. So it was demoralizing for Cardinals fans. I know that because there were a lot of Cardinals fans on my timeline that were very, very depressed. And it wasn't even like, oh, we were so close. It's like, yep, that was bad. That was bad.
I mean, I, as a Giants fan, I'd be embarrassed if our team got to the NLCS and lost like that. Mm-hmm. It would kind of be like, I wish they didn't even make the playoffs at all. And Grant wrote an article on The Athletic about, is it better to make it to the NLDS and get knocked out, or is it better to just not make the playoffs at all?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's better to not make the playoffs at all because you're not left with heartbreak.
No, it's true. So, yeah, Astros and Nationals definitely did not see that coming. Well, I think we both predicted the Astros making it to the World Series. But the Nationals, wow, that's crazy. And
I'm pissed I didn't pick them to go out, the Nats to go all the way, because I had Nats, Braves, and the LCS.
Yeah.
And I'm pissed that I didn't take the Nats in that one. This is the pitching matchups. Game one, Scherzer versus Cole. Game two, Strasburg, Verlander. Game three, Corbin, Greinke. I mean, this is pitching porn. This is like, if you had a VCR, I would say set your VCR, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And kind of reviewing our predictions from last weekend into the previous weeks, if you listen to episode 184, we reviewed that. We both definitely picked the Astros from day one to make it to the World Series. I had picked the Dodgers to face them. Of course, that didn't happen. And you had picked the Braves, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but you also predicted the Nats to get to the championship series. I did not. I definitely thought that the Dodgers are going to beat them. But when we updated our predictions last week, knowing who was in, I said the Cards would win. And you were like, nope, Nats, I believe in this team. And boy, you could not have been more correct. I mean, it wasn't even a close series. Like, you saw that coming a mile away. I am surprised. I am.
Yeah, I hate to like be the, you know, I was right type thought process, but
Take it.
I really did, though. The way these Nats are playing, it's just some teams you just see it. They just have it, and they have it. The moment's not too big for anybody. I mean, it's like you said, similar to 2012, because they were down in the wild card game, and then they were down to the Dodgers. Similar to 2010, because they're a bunch of misfits, and then similar to 2014, because the pitching is so good. And it's funny, because in 2012, like I mentioned, the Tigers had a week off, and the Giants had to play seven games against the Cardinals. And I'll never forget going into the 2012 series, everybody's like, Tigers are just better, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, nobody gave the Giants credit. And then the Giants went in and just swept them.
Well, like, think it was about it. Nothing. I went to game one of the World Series that year. And I remember driving up to the Caltrain station and riding the Caltrain to go meet my friends to go to that game. And the whole time I'm just thinking, this is freaking Barry Zito against Justin Verlander, because that's who they had to pitch, because, you know, Bumgarner and the others were taxed and they had to reset the rotation. You know, they couldn't reset with number one like a Verlander. And I was like, okay, well, they're clearly losing this game. That's fine. But, you know, maybe the Giants can make this a series. Just going in expecting a loss and just trying to enjoy the game, trying to enjoy the experience of a World Series, because I'd only been to one World Series game prior to that, and that was in 2002 against the Angels, and they lost that game. And so I've seen it, but, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, just the atmosphere. You're on, you know that the whole nation is watching, and, you know, this is something that, you know, it's rare to experience. It's hard to get tickets. It's expensive. It's, you know, you have to have your team actually make it there. And then to see Pablo, of course, hit three bombs that game, two off of Verlander, and Zito doing what he did, including getting a base hit. And it was just a euphoric experience. And then they just rolled into that sweep. Like you said, the Tigers are the ones that were predicted to win. They were the heavy favorites. And they have the week off, so they reset everything. And it just didn't happen for them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here with the Astros and the Nats. Because, you know, the Astros didn't go seven games, but they were one day short of that. So I don't know. I mean, I would not be surprised at this point, after seeing what they did against the Cards, and, you know, their strength of pitching that they can reset, that they win this thing. I don't know, but I don't think the week off is going to hurt them per se, because they're not the stalwart team that keeps coming back to the playoffs. I think it would hurt a veteran team more. I think a young team that hasn't experienced this before, it doesn't matter how much time you have off. I think that they're very hungry, and yeah, they're like, this is our one shot. So if you have someone like the Dodgers, or, you know, even the Cardinals, or now even the Astros, who have a week off, maybe they roll into this going, oh, we got this, and things don't work out.
So, saying all that, who you got? I'm taking the Astros in six. I think it's hard to bet against the Astros. They've shown time and again that they know. I mean, like I said, the Nats got it done, but the Astros, they had to win in different ways during their season, and we've seen it. So I think I'm sticking with the Astros, the original prediction. I think they'll win in six.
I'm going with six games as well with the Astros. Again, I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if the Nats somehow pull it out in six or seven, but I fully expect the Astros to win. And Vegas has them at the highest odds since, I believe, 2008.
So, oh, no.
Yeah, it's well, that could be the dagger in the heart, right?
But, right, that's what I'm saying.
But anyway, that's when, God, who was 2008? That was the
that was Philly, right? And Tampa. Yeah, it was Philly and Tampa.
That's right. Oh, no, sorry. It was 2007. It was Boston and Colorado. That was what the highest odds it's been. And, of course, they favored heavily with Boston. It was 240 to 100 was the Vegas odds.
Wow.
And, of course, Boston swept the Rockies 4-0. This is 235. So it's very, very close to that. So everyone expects the Astros to win. And you know what? They don't have the time off, but they've still reset fine. They got Garrett Cole going. He didn't have to pitch game seven. So he's going game one, and he's been untouchable in the playoffs, and potentially a Giants suitor. But we'll see what happens there. I fully expect the Astros to win. But again, you know, Greinke has not been good in the playoffs. He was great in the regular season. He's not been good in the playoffs. So, you know, if they split the first two and then you got Greinke going game three and he shits the bed again, suddenly you got the Nats up 2-1. And that becomes a problem for the Astros. So I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could too. This is – I'm not, like, 100% confident about my pick. Like, you know, I was certain – well, last year the Red Sox seemed to have it. They were head and shoulders above everybody, and I don't feel that way. It's funny, though, because the Astros won 107 games and the Nats won 93. So that's a 14-game difference. And the Nats already tied a record by beating the Dodgers in the NLDS because they were 13 games worse than them. So I haven't looked at the numbers, but I wonder if this is the one of the bigger disparities we've had from one team to another as far as wins by the end of the year, which still, I mean, AL was top heavy this year, so, you know, that's kind of part of why it happened, you know. So I don't think their records are indicative of the type of teams they are. And like we've talked about in the past, the Nats were 12 games under 500. They were 19 and 31, as I've heard over and over again on Fox or TBS, wherever the hell, you know. And they managed to come back because they keep getting those questions. When you were 19 and 31 back in May, did you see yourself standing here going to the World Series? I mean, there's not a single person that's going to say yes. But they're also not going to say no. They're just going to say, well, we dealt with adversity and da-da-da-da. You know, players are confident. You know, Bregman was interviewed after one of the games where they won it late on the Correa homer, game two in the Astros series. Uh-huh. And Ken Rosenthal's like, well, did you think you guys were going to lose the game after this happened? And Bregman's like, no, we never thought we were going to lose the game. Like, athletes are not thinking they're going to lose the game. They're thinking of how can they come back.
Yeah.
And it's a different perspective than when we're watching it than those guys in the game. So I think it's tough to predict on that front. The Nats could, you know, come out like gangbusters. Who knows how they'll hit in Houston with that short porch. So, you know, I like I said, Astros in six. Am I confident about it? I'd say I'm at about a 60% on it.
I'm with you, but we both definitely predicted the Astros at the beginning of the playoffs, and they have not shown any weaknesses thus
far. We both picked them to make the series at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, the beginning of the year, exactly. All right, so we're going to wrap up the podcast here talking about a few things. One of them, of course, is the Giants managerial search. It's expanded quite a bit. This is the rumor mill so far. More recently, it's been Mike Matheny coming out of the woodwork. And it's funny because I actually, even before this whole manager search started with his connections with the Giants, I thought he was a prime candidate, but hadn't heard anything about it. And sure enough, yeah. Here he is. Will Venable, Astros bench coach Joe Espada, Rays bench coach Matt Cotaro, Gabe Kapler, of course, and we'll talk about him in a second. Mark Kotze, the A's quality control coach, Royals quality control and catching coach Pedro Griffel. I might be murdering some of these names. And of course, WOTUS and Henry Mullins, among a few others here and there. So they're casting their net wide, and there are definitely some interesting choices here. Certainly younger guys, some without any managerial experience in the past, some with some. And I think that kind of plays to Farhan's strengths. He doesn't want necessarily a retread. And, you know, Mike Matheny and others could be a retread. Bob Guerin, of course, was mentioned before, but I don't think he's a serious candidate at this point. I don't know. So there's some issues, of course, with Gabe Kapler that have come to light, which you had posted earlier this week. But do you have any comments about that, or do you have any, you know, early betting lines on who might be emerging out of this crowd?
Just touching on Kapler for a moment, apparently an article came out before this season started about how there was sexual assaults in the Dodgers system, and Kapler just did not handle it well, so much as far as he didn't contact authorities, and he tried to arrange a sit-down between the players that were being accused and the girl that was accusing them. And so basically he just did not handle it well. And so there was still investigations. Farhan was there at that time, and I got the question from multiple people. What did Farhan know, and when did he know it? Which is a pervasive question in our society today. And I don't know the answer to that, but I have to think that the Giants did their due diligence when they hired Farhan, so this shouldn't be a concern when it comes to him. Do I think it disqualifies Kapler? Yeah, I don't think the Giants fan base wants him. You mentioned retreads, though. Matheny is kind of one. There's also talk that Kansas City might be looking into him because I know he's been working with them the last couple of years. I'm worried that WOTUS and Mullins were just cursory interviews. And, you know, like you, I was reading Hank Schulman right before we came on, and he talked about Will Venable getting the Max and Molly's kid, getting the interview. He's only 37 years old, and he's been the first base coach with the Cubs the last two seasons. Kotze is another name that I've heard really pushed to the front. I'm not sure what a quality control coach does in baseball, but he's been working inside the organization, the A's organization nonetheless, for the last couple of years. So I think that's in his favor. And from what I read, Kotze has gotten a follow-up on the phone, but nobody has come in for a second interview just yet.
Yeah.
So I think they're narrowing it down right now. And over the next week or so, they'll be talking to certain candidates a second time. And if I'm a betting man, which I am, I would have taken Kapler out of the gate, but I'm leaning Kotze at this point.
Yeah, leaning Kotze, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, no, he's got a lot of traction, for sure.
And the bottom line is we don't really know any of these names, which one of them will make good managers. Everybody, you know, gets their chance at some point. Dave Roberts never managed, you know, in the big leagues before the Dodgers hired him. Aaron Boone of the Yankees. A.J. Hinch is a retread in Houston. He was actually with the Diamondbacks first. But there's a lot of Joey Cora in Boston. There's a lot of first-time managers that can get the job done. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, like, dead set on, you know, we got to find somebody who knows what he's doing or anything like that. I think what the Giants need is somebody who works well with the front office and can then also relate to players. And it's tough to replace a legend. So I think they're trying to be extra careful with the way they – do this. And you know, I don't have a favorite personally. I just think Kotze is probably, from what I've read, the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with you on that one. Kotze's been getting a lot of pub there, so I think the recent emergence of Matheny is possible. I think in the previous executive guys, he probably would have been the leading candidate, but with Farhan again staying away from guys have already managed, going with new guys who believe in the analytics a little bit more, and of course, ones he's had a relationship with or at least connected to a previous organization, I think that, yeah, that's probably a good call. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, I mean, that then brings the question I was going to say real quick before we move on. The one thing we're not talking about is the GM search. And I haven't heard anything about it. All I hear is managerial candidates. And it makes me wonder, though, if they're kind of talking to two of these guys in tandem, and they might put one in the front office and one on the field.
Quite possible. It's going to be very interesting offseason for the Giants. There's no doubt about it. And speaking of, just wrapping up kind of the Arizona Fall League, Joey Bart, I think we talked about it last time. He broke his finger on a pitch, so he's out for the fall season. He's going to be fine. It was non-surgical healing. He'll be fine for spring training. Helio Ramos is hitting under 200 in the Arizona Fall League, but Giants officials are saying he's better than what his stats indicate. So we'll see how that develops, but not too much of a focus on this kind of stuff right now. It's it's Arizona Fall League. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, and Ramos does seem to fluctuate at times. Yeah. He's I don't want to say maybe he is. He's a streaky hitter in a sense. Bart, you just feel bad for the guy because every time he starts getting going,
Jesus
Christ. He runs into something and there's nothing to do about it. You can't prevent your finger from getting hit by a pitch short of diving away, at the speed of the flash. So, like you said, there's not much coming out of that just yet. We'll have more Giants news as the offseason rolls on.
Absolutely. We also had CC Sabathia announce his retirement from baseball today with a nice post. Kind of that was expected. He's a Bay Area native from Vallejo. So sad to see him go, but, these guys move on. That's fine. And then kind of a sad note this week, Major League Baseball umpire Eric Cooper died at the age of 52. He just did the ALDS between the Yankees and the Twins 2 weeks ago. And he was doing second base when the Yankees clinched in game 3. Apparently he had knee surgery and was recuperating at his dad's home, and he had a blood clot and that killed him. So real sad because this is like a routine surgery and there is a small percentage of people who develop blood clots. That's why they're on blood thinners. One of my best friends growing up on the street that I lived on, his dad came to our wedding. His mom and dad came to our wedding. And it was about 2 years after that. So it's like 2005. He had knee replacement surgery. And he was, again, recuperating at home. He had a brace on. He went to lunch one day with some friends. This is like 2 weeks after his surgery. And he dropped dead of a blood clot at the restaurant. Ooh. And Bill King died that way, the A's announcer. He had hip replacement surgery. He died of a blood clot. I'm forgetting his name. He was a very popular ABC newscaster here. And in fact, I remember listening to his last radio segment before he went in for hip surgery, hip replacement as well. And he was talking about how he was nervous about it. And he's like, it's a routine surgery, but, people die of blood clots and I'm just really afraid of it. So, but anyway, I'll see you on the other side. And he freaking died of a blood clot. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. So, and my wife had a blood clot. The only reason I know this, cause I followed this stuff so much, and my wife had a blood clot after the delivery of our first child. She developed it in the back of her leg, which of course can dislodge and hit the heart or the lungs and kill you pretty much instantly. And we noted it. I said, we're going to the hospital, honey. She had symptoms of it. And I said, I think it might be a blood clot. Went in, had the ultrasound, and it was diagnosed as a blood clot. So she had blood thinners. I had to give her shots, actually, every day for the next pregnancy. And she had to be on pills and all that. And she's fine. But blood clots are no joke. So, whenever you're having a surgical procedure, no matter how routine it may seem, that's just a very small percentage chance that could happen. And it just sucks. You just hear these stories and you're like, God damn it. Yeah. Here he is, a relatively healthy guy, only 52. He's young. He's just going in for knee surgery. Not a big deal. And he's at home recuperating. And it's not like you feel it coming. It's like, oh, here comes a blood clot. It's like, it hits you like a gunshot and it just sucks.
Fun fact about Eric Cooper. He was the home plate umpire for both Mark Burley's no-hitter and Mark Burley's perfect game. Yeah. He is only the second umpire in history to be behind the plate for multiple no-hitters by the same person. I can't remember who the other umpire is, but somebody was behind the plate for two of Koufax's. So Cooper did go down, you know, in history in a way. I saw the outpouring from Major League Baseball and people. Cooper was, you know, I know umpires a little better than most people do because that's been my business for a long time. And, you know, like on site, I can, you know, as soon as he makes a call, oh yeah, that's Coop. You know what I mean? Like they cut to the first base umpire. I'm like, Phil Cuzzi's at first today. Like I know this crap, like the back of my hand. And Coop was always regarded as a good umpire, a good ball strike umpire, and just a very good fella. He was always about the game being fair, which is what an umpire's job is. You know, you don't want to insert yourself into the game. You just want to let the game flow around you.
Right.
And, you know, so everything I read, you know, and I can't remember anything happening like this since Eric Gregg. Apparently the name Eric is cursed. Eric Gregg passed away many years ago when he, like, passed out in Cincinnati, and then he died later that day in the hospital, I believe.
Yeah, he passed out behind home plate. That was a scary thing.
Yep. So Coop just – it just sucks because, like you said, it's, you know, he just worked the ALDS. You know, you have to wonder if he was possibly up for the World Series nod because – umpires can work one series in the playoffs, the LDS, and then the World Series. But if you're working the League Championship Series, you're not working the World Series.
Right.
And it's funny, in the American League, Jeff Nelson was the crew chief and home plate umpire in Game 3 of the Astros Series, and he took a ball off his face, and he had to leave, ended up with a concussion, and somebody else came in and took over as crew chief for the rest of the series. And it sucks for Jeff Nelson because now it's not like he's going to go on and umpire the World Series. He reached his pinnacle for this year. So when it comes to Coop, it was, you know, it was just sad. It's sad anytime somebody dies at that young of an age, especially with something like you said. Not necessarily that it could be prevented. It could have been, but just something that is so small could get any of us at any time. So it's just, you know.
Well, he also worked the 14 World Series between the Royals and the Giants, which is interesting. He also did 10 Division Series, 4 League Championship Series, and the 2005 All-Star Game, and 2 World Baseball Classics, like you said. 2 perfect game, or sorry, 3 no-hitters, 2 by Mark Burley, and then 1 by Hideo Nomo. And he also worked the plate in the final game in the career of Cal Ripken Jr.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's had some notable games, so...
Absolutely. Yeah, Coop's a name I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been around the league for over 25 years when he was very, very young. He started in the 90s as a replacement ump and then came up and did a permanent replacement. So anyway, RIP Eric Cooper. Hopefully his family is. Yeah. It's just sad.
Yeah. It is.
All right. Well, don't want to end on a bummer, but as far as our schedule is concerned, the World Series schedule, of course, starts tomorrow with Game 1. Now, this is going to kind of vary. Eric and I will talk offline, but if we were to record next Monday, we would do so if the World Series was over. Game 5 happens Sunday, so if it's a sweep or 4-1... then we're definitely going to record next Monday. However, Game 6 is on Tuesday and Game 7 is on Wednesday. So Eric and I will get our schedules going, but we definitely want to record after the end of the World Series, review that kind of into the Hot Stove League, and then there'll be, you know, several podcasts throughout the off season, but it won't be the frequency that it has been now because, of course, not so much happens in the off season.
No, but we'll have news between management, managers, and sure. GMs and all that stuff. And then, I mean, granted, we could probably wait to talk free agency till February because nobody signs until then anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's always at the end. And now we have holdouts or people who aren't signed and they linger into April and May. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 185 of the TorchaCast. You can follow us collectively at TorchaCast on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Just find us there. We have a YouTube channel where this posts. Of course, we're on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Let's see. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric. And, of course, always visit TorchCast.com where we post all of our articles and podcasts and other assorted variety of things. You got anything else to talk about or pimp?
No, if you come searching for me on Twitter, just be warned, my name is Old Man Nathanson now because I'm a grandpa.
Get off
again,
my lawn!
So, yeah,
you're yelling
pretty
at clouds above Georgia. I get it.
Oh, yeah, I am. Please come over us. We just had a tropical storm come through, and I never would have known it. There was nothing. There was literally no wind. We're getting storms tonight that are going to be worse than a tropical storm that just came through. Man. That's all right. Next year, I'll be in Michigan.
That's right. And, yeah, this week, it looks like we're heading for our little dog days of summer kind of respite here, or not even a respite, it's upheaval. We are expecting temperatures in the 90s this week.
Sucker.
I know.
I'm going to be in the 70s. Yeah. Today's like 86, and that's our warmest day this week. So, like I said, I put the air back on, even though I turned it off, but I get to turn it off overnight tonight, and I don't have to turn it on for like a week.
Yeah. This is usually the time of the year where our energy bill drops quite a bit. But apparently, our AC bill will go back up this week, but that'll be fine. All right. So, that'll do it for episode 185. We'll see you in anywhere from 7 to 10 days. Ish for episode 186, and we'll review the World Series. So for Eric, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next time. Kaboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.